I'm just grateful that Tom could take a moment and reflect, because I have to reflect, Jordan, you have to reflect, we all have to reflect on things we say, and we do want to make sure that what we say is not hurting the other one. But I think we still owe it to the other one to express our truths. And hopefully from sharing our truths, we come up with a positive perspective from the two truths, and we come up with a brand new truth or a better truth. So,
welcome to Faith in Each Other. I'll be your host, Jordan Howard. And on this show, I want to dive into the minds and the beliefs from people of all walks of life, baby boomers to millennials. No question is off limits as we learn together and go through the journey together of seeing where we as a society have gone wrong and where we have gotten it right. I believe that our faith in each other can lead us into a beautiful future. Each episode, I will be joined by Reverend David Williams, my pastor, and his good friend Tom Ingram, as we talk through challenges facing our society today and gain an understanding from different perspectives. Let's dive in. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast, Faith in Each Other. Hello, Tom. Hello, Pastor Dave. How are you guys?
We're good.
Doing well. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. And just to recap, last part of this episode, we were speaking on terrorism, and it kind of segued into hate crimes and how they come together as a whole. Post 9/11, our faith in each other has greatly diminished. Within my life, we've witnessed many acts of terrorism in all forms, whether that's domestic, foreign, or even in the form of communication. There were some great opinions from both of you, and we kind of left it in the middle. So I'd like to touch base and kind of jump back to what we were saying before. What makes terrorism different than any other form of violence? Judging by the historic and current examples, to what extent is terrorism an effective means for groups or individuals to achieve political objectives? And why do you think that? I'll open the floor. Tom, did you have any response to that?
Yeah, no, my comment is that all terrorism, that there's no terrorism without democracy. There has to be democracy before there can be terrorism, because there's no purpose to it otherwise, right? The purpose of terrorism is to divide us. The purpose of terrorism is to destroy faith in each other. And, you know, last week's conversation, you know, when we were talking about the Klan, I mean, that's kind of what that my week was about, that the, you know, I was kind of embarrassed the way I handled myself last week when I got off the, and I texted Reverend Williams, and he said he forgave me, said he'd continue talking to me. So I spent 2 days trying to figure out what I was going to say on this podcast to try to convince you guys to see it my way. And then I spent a couple of days, I just felt totally burdened the whole time. As soon as I got off the podcast last time, I felt this tremendous burden about what I'd said and how to formulate it so it wouldn't be offensive to both of you. And then that's when the abortion leak came out. And to me, the abortion issue is the poster child for you're both right. It's the one of those you're both right issues. And so then once I realized that, this is one of my main mantras, is you should look at all these issues as both people are right. And then as soon as I felt that, I felt the burden come off of my shoulders. And I felt like I could understand where the Reverend was coming from. That he was talking about what really happened. He was talking about reality. He was talking about the experience of his community and saying that the people that were cruel and brutal and horrible had some kind of higher purpose, like voting rights, gives them a status they don't deserve. And so what I said, I thought was bad. I mean, and I could feel the disappointment in his voice when I said it. What the experts will tell us is that human beings can see patterns where there aren't any. But what that really means is we see contradictions where there aren't any. We see contradictions in the other person's argument that must mean that I'm wrong. And this is just a perfect case of how what he was talking about was right. And what I was talking about wasn't right. But once I could see, and I know this sounds hokey, but once I could see the rightness of what he was saying, all of a sudden what I was really saying became clear to me. I'm serious, man. You can laugh all you want. But I'm just telling you that all of a sudden it's like, no, man, why did you say that? That's stupid. It doesn't even have anything to do with what you're trying to say. It doesn't even have anything to do with, why did you say that? What were you doing? But once I could see the validity of what he was, then I just felt so much better about myself.
Absolutely. You had that clarity. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Quite the heavy 2 weeks, I would say, for you then. Pastor Dave, did you have anything to say to Tom about that?
Well, you know, as always, first and foremost, Tom and I are friends, and friends have the ability to agree as much as possible, but then friends also have the ability to not see things in the same vein, but it doesn't damage the friendship. And to me, that has to be of utmost importance, that we're not trying to destroy one another with our comments. We're not trying to paint the other one as outside of the human race and the human perspective. It is that there are multiple perspectives. And when we simply hear each other, that might be the first step to finding reconciliation. But it's what Tom and I both realize, it's hard to move toward reconciliation when you're passionate about your position. And when you're passionate about your position, that is where you want to stay, you want to defend, but sometimes it stops you from hearing the other one. So you know, that's where I came down. Tom said nothing in our last episode that, you know, brought me to a weary moment of wondering, you know, hey, I don't know if I can continue to do this. No, I'm learning from him. And also, I hope that he's learning from me. And together, what we do, we're saying maybe our conclusion will help us as we deal with our own constituents. And that's the beauty of learning from each other. So I'm just grateful that Tom could take a moment and reflect, because I have to reflect, Jordan, you have to reflect, we all have to reflect on things we say, and we do want to make sure that what we say is not hurting the other one. But I think we still owe it to the other one to express our truths. And hopefully from sharing our truths, we come up with a positive perspective from the two truths, and we come up with a brand new truth or a better truth. So I'm grateful for my brother. Yeah.
Oh, appreciate that. Well, thanks guys for that, to clearing that.
What I should have said was not that the Klan was about voting rights. What I should have said is the politician that promises to get rid of the Klan for you, that's the guy that'll overthrow the government once he takes over.
Sure.
Right. So Hitler, his promise was to get rid of the communists. And it was so important to get rid of the communists that whatever it took was okay. And right, that included liquidating the democracy.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, speaking about terrorism and our subject matter of terrorism and hate crime out there in the world, Pastor Dave, I want to reiterate, I don't know if I can't really recall if I asked you, is violence ever justified in the eyes of God? You know, speaking of the religious groups of terrorism and, you know, the modern day religious terrorist groups, is the violence ever justified in the eyes of God? I mean, I would argue that most of us would take up arms and stand up and fight for what they believe in or try to protect those they love. But I mean, their acts, are they justifiable?
Well, maybe I would prefer to pose a question differently. How do we see violence throughout Scripture? And all you got to do is open up the Old Testament in the Old Testament swarms with the David and Goliath stories. It swarms with battles. It swarms with, I call them field generals taking over a new territory, a different territory. But I think what we must see is God never would condone violence. That's a human construct. Humans take odds with one another, and how they resolve those odds can often be brutal and inhumane. And God is never going to back that. I think what we see is the further we are away from the premise that God has for human beings to live in harmony with each other, the more we fall into the trap of saying, I will defend whatever I want at all cost. And if you have something that I want, and my relationship or understanding of what God has for humanity is covered or broken, then I'm going to result to violence. And God never results to violence. I just have to tell us that what God wants from us, he's constantly saying, how do we live in harmony with each other? But when I look back at the Old Testament, when I look at the Ten Commandments, you know, God basically was saying to a community of people, here is a blueprint in how you can live together without harming one another, but live in a peaceful state of mind, to have a community where all will be appreciated. And so we have the commandments. But I think he gave us those commandments and the laws and how to run a society or a government that respected those who led or lead in power and those who will live under that power. But war comes and violence and terrorism comes as a sign of our disloyalty to God or our brokenness with God. And so when we can't see the truth of God, we also don't see the truth in one another. We don't see the faith. We don't have faith in one another. And when we lose our faith in one another, then I will protect what I believe is right. And even if it causes me to hit, hurt, or harm my brother or my sister, I can label that, well, this is right because they are so wrong. And we don't do life like that. God has called us to find ways of going the extra mile, finding ways of promoting peace and love and harmony. God is never a God of terrorism. He's never a God of war. But that doesn't say God doesn't say to defend oneself. I think your defense should always be, you know, my last effort. For some in the religious world, they will never take up arms against each other. They would rather lose their life. You know, they're not going to fight. They're going to be pacifists. They're not going to pick up a weapon. They're not going to throw a stone. For some, that's too extreme. But what they're saying is, I would rather give my life up than to take a life, than to destroy a life. And most of us, we in our faith tradition says, then we want to live a life of peace, not a life of harmful pain and destruction. So God never, throughout scriptures, God is never condoning war. God is never advocating war. I think those are the places where man defaults to get his way, to grab what he wants. That's when war becomes, quote, the object of, I'll take that. I'll use war to get land. I'll use war to get possessions of material value. But that's not God's way.
Okay. Tom, did you have a response to what Pastor Dave said at all?
Yeah. To me, what we have is a problem in the United States where we can't get along with each other. And regardless of whether we believe in God or not, the Bible, like the Reverend was saying, is a blueprint for how to get along with each other. So we find ourselves at the point where, you know, the anti-abortion people and the pro-abortion people are near violence at each other. And maybe we could look at this document as a reference to how you could get along with each other. But to me, violence is the ultimate way to divide people.
Yes.
Violence is a way to divide people that'll last generations. And that's why we really discourage it in our own system. We say that it's peaceful protest is okay, but violent protest is not.
Right.
But there's an extension to it, too. There's even nonviolent ways to divide people. So it's really not just a lack of violence that we're looking for. That's kind of the way we put it now. But what we're really looking for is a way to get along with the other people in a constructive way. And that's a lot more difficult than eliminating violence.
Absolutely. The struggle of self-will versus God's will. And to what extent do you agree with this statement and why? It is possible to limit the threat of terrorism, but terrorism as a whole can never be defeated. Tom, would you like to respond to that? It is possible to limit the threat of terrorism, but terrorism as a whole can never be defeated. Do you agree with that and why?
There's a weapon against terrorism, and it's unity. It's outreach to the people on the other side. And Israel's a really good example of this. When they have a terrorist attack, they have a unity ritual that they go through to be against the terrorists. So the way to defeat terrorism is through unity.
Okay. All right. Pastor Dave, did you have a response to that statement?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. As long as we're human beings, we have flaws. And during those periods of our flaws, we will find a way to support our cause or our ideology, irregardless of what our neighbor says or believes. Now, how we exhibit them is totally different. Terrorism hangs off of fear. And so when you have interrupted my lifestyle or interrupted what I think is just and honest toward me, terrorism and hatred are such a strong tool to get you off balance that we will use it because it's a strategy. It's a strategy to reach a goal or purpose that the persons or groups that are using this is hoping to dislodge a person or a group. And then if violence is needed after that, if some type of action is needed after the terrorism is exposed, then they're hoping that the person or persons that are receiving this is off balance, and they're going to capitalize off of that. I like what Tom just said. I think the antidote to terrorism is unity. And so, but in the wake of terrorism, you're sowing disunity. You do not want unity to be present, and so you are sowing all of the seeds of, I'm hoping that what I'm planting will sustain those who will salute what I'm doing. And so it is actually sowing a type of disunity, because within unity, terrorism can't live. It can't grow. It can't be. And so I do think the more that people begin, going back to our earlier conversation, when people begin to hear each other, when people begin to move away from, I'm right at the moment, it is, but I understood or I listened long enough to accept that person has a valid, has taken a valid position, even though I may not agree with it, it's a valid position. And it takes a lot of humility to admit to somebody else having a right perspective when it's opposite of your perspective. And so when that happens, I think eventually the seeds of unity have room to grow. But if you can't get there, then this unity is going to be the leading force. And so terrorism wants to do away with a sense of unity among anybody in its near grasp. It wants total chaos, because if it can live in chaos, it can cause greater and greater, more hysteria, as well as disunity. So I think it can be at times reduced, but because of our humanity, we are not always going to have an open door for each other. You know, that's just who we are. We're just not. And when I feel that I'm being shortchanged, or there's something you have that I want, there's a great possibility that I will try all sorts of strategies to get from you what I think I deserve.
Absolutely. The opposite of what you feel is also true. Now, speaking of unity, is unity truly attainable in the United States? Tom, do you think unity is truly attainable in the United States?
It's in our best interest. It's in our best interest. It's in all of our best interests, unity. So if you can get it, I think if we could get to the point where we understood that disunity was dangerous, that it threatens the democracy, then we'd have a reason why unity was important. But if you look at the abortion debate right now that's going on, that's, you know, going back and forth, there's neither side really wants unity. They want to be right. And it's, you know, so if you end up with 50 states and 25 of them allow abortion, it seems like everybody who wants an abortion in the United States could be accommodated if we wanted to do that. But it's not really about abortion. It's about being right. And if it's about that,
and we might have to save that abortion topic.
But anyway, yeah. The being right.
That's a heavy topic. We're going to definitely have to speak on that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll get off the abortion.
Being right. No. I just want to keep topic.
But if you want to fix terrorism, but, yeah, I can tell back you how to do that. Elect me dictator, and I'll handle it for you. And that's what the terrorists are going for right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, absolutely. Just to talk about a little bit of the hate crime aspect as well. We spoke last time about if the hate crimes were actually, or hate crime laws were actually effective or not. And I just wanted to ask personally if either of you have been a victim of a hate crime. And personally, have you ever directly been affected of a hate crime or by a hate crime, whether that's, you know, family or friends or even yourself personally?
You know, I can just say hate crime against my own personhood or my family, no. But being prejudiced against or being called out because of a race that I am, for sure. Oh, multiple times. And it just comes with wearing my skin color, that there has been some things that were shady or not justified based on the color of my skin, for sure. Yeah. But no one has bombed my home. No one has hurt my children. No one has vandalized my church. No. But in our community, we've had, you know, many of our religious buildings, the temple mosque for our Islamic brothers, you remember a couple of years ago, were vandalized. And it was during a hot moment when there was talk about Muslims coming to our community. And so there was a rally of unity to support them. One of our mainline churches was their doors and their signage in their yard was spray painted with the N-word simply because they had a black pastor, but the congregation was white. And so, yeah, that happens. And, you know, that's been in the last, all of that's been in the last 5 years. So hate crimes do take place, but yeah, it's here. Yeah.
Okay. Tom, demographically speaking, why do you think hate crimes happen more in different places than even here in Colorado? I know, born and raised here, like Pastor Dave said, he hasn't been directly affected by hate crimes. And I would have to agree. I mean, besides the being called the N-word, I don't know how many times, but other than that, you know, I haven't been directly affected by a truly act of violence. How big of a part does demographics play in the hate crimes that are out there?
Yeah, you mean demographics in terms of racial demographics?
Sorry.
Yeah, you know, I honestly believe that if you had perfect, had no diversity at all, you'd still have hate crimes. I don't really believe that you can get to no hate crime through lack of diversity. I don't think it's a demographic thing. As far as it happening more in one location than the other, I don't really know if I believe that. But as far as hate crimes affecting me personally, and I don't know if this is a good, you know, this really constitutes a hate crime. But to me, equality happens not in the courts or at home, but it happens on the factory floor. And I feel like I've seen a certain amount of driving out of people that you didn't like on the factory floor through comments or leaving things on people's desks. I've seen that. Okay. And if you want to insult somebody or whatever, that's fine. or it's not fine. But when you start taking away someone's income, then that gets real serious to me. So as far as like driving people out of the factory, I believe I've seen that. And I believe that that's a real serious thing. And Dave and I have had a certain amount of with trying to get people into my factory, and we struggle with that a little bit. And that's a big frustration for me too. But yeah, and I've been called a racist, obviously, in a number of times. And the one thing that I would really emphasize is how much damage doing something like that really does. You know, I have a member of my family, I don't want to say which one it is, but if you ask him about his political views, it'll go back to being called a racist that one time 35 years ago. So, you know, I would really emphasize how much damage you can do with that word as well.
Jordan, may I add real quick? Can I make an addition? Hatred doesn't just come because of race. You know, it's not just acts against a group based on its skin color. You know, you can be in a country where people look just alike, and you can have acts of hatred based on, it's not so much race, it may be economics, it may be education, it may be urban versus rural, you know, it may be men against women, women against men. It's just anytime you want to intimidate some person or some group, or hatred can be the motivator, you know, because I'm dissatisfied with you or that group. And so people will go to a place of, well, then I want to make it known that you're not welcome here. And the reason you're not welcome here, it is whatever it is. It's hatred does not just apply to people of color. You know, or based on a race, hatred crimes can be, I think, varied in so many, many ways. We often, in this country, we often think everything hinges on black and white. Poverty is poverty. You know, poverty, people who are suffering from food shortage zones, they're not just people of color. They're people who are starving. But what we do, we try to say, you know, all the people in our country who are weighing down the system and using all the free money are people of color. And if we could get people of color off the welfare, then people of color are, you know, our financial burden would be lighter, but people of color are not the majority of people here. And so you have a lot of people who are not of color who also benefit from our social agencies. But we just use terrorism for, we just use hatred and just says, we want everybody to think the hatred is just based on race. And it's not. It's not in no ways.
Yeah, the top three hate crimes are race, sexual orientation, and religion. But there's also people that just don't like each other. And I would have to say a fear of anybody different than themselves, you know, can create that animosity to the point of hatred and even violence just because of the differences.
Sure.
Tom, did you have any response to what Pastor Dave said there?
Iraq is my case study. Right. Okay. And so in Iraq, they had Martin Luther King's dream in Iraq under Saddam Hussein. Right. In Shia people, Sunni people, Kurds, Arabs, Turkmen all lived together in peace and harmony. It was when democracy came that terrorism came. It was when democracy came that diversity mattered, right? So Sunnis and Shias intermarried in Iraq before the war and didn't after. It's the democracy that makes other people important. If we were in Saddam Hussein's Iraq right now, then you would not be a political threat to me. I would not be a political threat to you. The only political threat we got is Saddam. So if you're a Sunni, you're a Shia, you got a different skin color than me, none of that matters. It's brought out by democracy. That's my message. And that's a message that the American people don't get right now. They don't understand that democracy is what's causing this. And when we act this way, we make democracy look bad.
Yeah, it seems like once Saddam was removed, it became a huge, huge issue. And that's when it actually, you know, the boiling point. Terrorism. I feel like you can't have terrorism without democracy. Like, it only exists if democracy exists, you know. So
let me just give you an example, mm-hmm. right, is that they come in and they tell Joseph Stalin or Saddam Hussein, they just flew two airplanes into the Twin Towers in our capital and the buildings collapsed. And their answer would be, what do you want from me? You're not putting it in the newspaper, right? You get that far. We're not admitting that this happened. But yeah, the people in the building, I don't care that they're dead. I'm a dictator. I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter to me. And we're certainly not going to talk about it. So there's no terrorism under Saddam because it doesn't have an impact. There's no there. There's no reason to be doing it. But once you can make the Sunnis want to drive the Shias out of their neighborhood, now you got some leverage. When there's an act of unity or when there's an act of terrorism and then we respond with unity, what we're telling the terrorists is we get what you're doing. We understand your plan, and it's not going to work because we're not going to let it work. That's the message. When there's terrorism and you respond with unity, what you're really saying is we get what you're trying to do, and we're not going to let it happen.
Now, do you think our democracy is prepared to handle? I asked you last time, how prepared do you think our democracy is currently in this state to handle, you know, maybe another event just that kind of parallels 9/11.
I think our country is very, very divided. I think our government is to the point where it's dysfunctional right now, where the people in the government are fighting with each other so much that they can't do the basic things they need to run the government. So I think we're very vulnerable. I think we need a time out and a reboot to understand what democracy is, what the threat to it is, and what we need to do to fight it. So I think we're in a very vulnerable situation because we're running a democracy and we don't understand the basic weakness of the system is that it makes it turn on each other. So, yeah, we're vulnerable right now, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you agree with Tom, Pastor Dave?
Oh, most certainly. I do think our government is in a very fragile, broken state, and we can see it throughout how we are doing day-to-day business. There is no mistaking that. But I think people, you know, there are people who are saying, well, you're the government. Why aren't you running the government in the way that it's supposed to be ran? And so there's frustration there because people say, well, then why do we have a government? Well, if you don't have a government, you have a dictator. And the dictator will step in and the dictator will shake all that out and just say, don't worry about it. I will make the answers. I will make all of the decisions and you won't have to worry with that. So being that we're in that position, there are some people who are saying too much government. We want less government. But I don't think they understand, like Tom says, that that's not the issue. The issue is we've chosen as a country to have a democracy as the rule of government. And we haven't taken time to think about what will it take to maintain a democracy? What work do we have to do? What do we as an American people have to respond when we say we want this democracy? I think people are saying, no, we want a democracy that's for me. I don't care about you. And that's not democracy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to be a democracy that says this is about us. And what will we do to make sure we are okay? And so I wholeheartedly agree with Tom. And that's what's growing right now. We want a half-sided democracy. If you know, we just want a democracy for the Republicans. If the Republicans can just get the Republicans, that's going to be the right democracy. Democrats are saying, no, we want a democracy that will fulfill all of the needs of the Democrats. That's not democracy on either side. A democracy says they both can coexist and we will work together to maintain the peace that this country does, what every person deserves under this democracy. And you can be a Republican or you can be a Democrat. But when it all boils down, this is the United States of America, and we will make sure that all the rights and privileges that are due to every man and woman are enforced for our own good, be it local or nationally or internationally. And I don't think we for some reason we don't know, we are not playing to that right now. We are just saying, I want a government for my group. And we're getting further and further wedged. Yeah.
Gotcha. This is a scary thought. As we draw near to the end of the episode, is there any kind of closing thoughts, anything either you like to get out there about either the terrorism that we just didn't talk about, you know, something that you want to talk about?
What I would say,
Tom, did you have anything for us?
Go ahead, Dan.
You know, I would just say, you know, just the word terrorism, for some people, it is very close at heart. It's very close to them. And to be terrorized, to be made to live a life in fear, yeah, it's so dehumanizing that people are hoping that there is I don't know if it's a rescue or is there a way or a direction we can turn where that fear of terror is minimized or destroyed. And so when we hear the terms of terror and hatred, I think those who have lived in that space for any period of time are just wanting that trauma to end. And so that's why it is so sensitive to some groups of people when they hear the term, you know, we want hate laws, we want terrorism minimized. And then for someone to say, well, you really can't write a law, people would have to change from their hearts. I think people know that, and but they still are saying, well, whatever it takes, can we find a place of safety or refuge to go to? And right now, people are so at odds with one another. It just doesn't feel that our government system can help afford ending terrorism, because we're terrorizing each other. I mean, we're just terrorizing each other. You know, I don't like you. You're pro-abortion. You're anti-abortion. Bad devil. And so we're terrorizing each other more and more. And it's just, it's becoming a heavy albatross around people's lives that the ideal of hope is very clouded right now, because the very system of democracy that would advocate for a unified government just doesn't seem to be possible anymore. So I just say that that this terrorism is in hatred. There are some who've never touched it, never walked behind it, never experienced it. And for them, they're going, hey, I don't know what the big cry is about, you know, because we're fine. But it's just that there are people who live this every day, and they're getting weary in the journey. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Pastor Dave. Tom, real quick, before I get final thoughts from you, I didn't mean to cut you off about your topic about the abortion thing earlier. I just feel like we need to dedicate, you know, maybe an episode to it. Like, it's a passionate thing. It's something we need to talk about to restore that faith in each other. Yeah,
because that's one of the real driving divisive forces. But anyway, my summary for today's episode is that the purpose of terrorism is to destroy faith in each other.
Sure.
We need faith in each other to run our democracy. If it wasn't a democracy, we wouldn't need it. But we're running a democracy, and the only way that democracy makes sense is if we have faith in each other. And if a white guy attacks a black guy in a way that harkens back to the Jim Crow and all that, the Klan and all that stuff, specifically for the purpose of dividing people of color from white people, then that's the worst terrorism we got. He's the worst of the whole bunch. He makes Osama bin Laden look like a good person. Yeah. Again, I don't think hate crime is a good name for it. I guess that's where we started last time. But the purpose of terrorism is to destroy faith in each other. And the person who commits a hate crime is trying to divide the races where we're already vulnerable. So that person is the worst of all.
Absolutely. And of course, I just want to thank you guys for joining me in today's episode. And, you know, with all the threats to our society and our nation, it's hard to have faith in each other. The threats of terrorism is real and present, most of which is shockingly closer to home than we all realize. And I just want to thank you guys once again for being here. And we will see you all next time on Faith in Each Other. Thank you so much for listening to Faith in Each Other. I hope today's conversation encourages you in your journey to have hard conversations, and most importantly, to listen to others around you. If we're going to have faith in each other, I believe we need to be willing to have hard conversations, and that is what we aim to do on this show. We will see you next time on Faith in Each Other. If you enjoyed this show, please share it with someone you know. See you next time.